Welcome to the Money and Marriage Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Nelson. My mission to empower millennial couples to make money moves that won't just improve your financial health, but strengthen your marriage as well. In this podcast, I share stories, tips, and tricks, both from my experience as a certified financial planner and from my own marriage, to help you and your spouse kick financial anxiety to the curb and use your money to create the lives you love together. Let's get started. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Money and Marriage Podcast. Today, we are talking about how to merge finances after marriage. Look, to get your family off on the right foot, it is critically important to have a proven strategy in place for how to merge finances when you get married. You know, unfortunately, as we've talked about on the show before, frankly, a lot of the guidance out there about how to combine finances after marriage tends to be fairly one size fits all. You know, it's really hard to find good, nuanced, moderated guidance that actually looks at the specific issues that you and your spouse are having and can have a nuanced discussion about the right solution to fit your needs. So we've talked about this before in the podcast. If you're interested in some background on this topic, I'd recommend you check out episodes 96 and 113. But today, you know, I kind of want to move beyond that and talk about 9 tips for couples on how to combine finances that will help you do so in a way that's customized to you and your spouse's unique money habits, money attitudes, and money values. If you're interested in learning more on this, I encourage you to pick up a copy of my book, Marriage Centered Money, Get on the Same Financial Page, and Achieve Your Life Goals Together. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. But without further ado, tip number 1 on how to merge finances after marriage. There is a right and wrong answer for you and your spouse on how you should merge finances after marriage. But the right answer for you might be the wrong answer for a different couple. You know, we're very good as in our industry, right? Financial planners, financial media personalities, we're very quick to give out financial prescriptions on big complex topics like how to merge finances. You know, you can find people out there who will tell you always need to combine all of your finances after you get married. And you can find equally respected people who will tell you never to combine anything after you get married. But, you know, like that can result in obviously some confusion, right? Around getting some conflicting and very absolute guidance. But, there's no nuance in there, right? And in reality, I have found in my work with couples over the years that when we talk about merging finances, like there's just a ton of nuance around this topic in the real world. Giving kind of one size fits all, like saying there's an absolute right or an absolute wrong answer that's true for everybody. To me, it's a little bit like a doctor saying that everybody should always take penicillin when they have a bacterial infection, right? Sure. It's a great drug, right? It works for a lot of people. In some cases it makes sense, but you know, it might not be effective for you with what you are struggling with. If the root cause of whatever infection you have is something that penicillin isn't necessarily built to address particularly well. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert on these things, but you can imagine a scenario where an effective antibiotic for you might not work based on whatever it is that you have, right? There might be a better option out there for you. Not to mention the fact that people, of course, are allergic to penicillin and those people should not take it for obvious reasons. You know, both of the options that we're talking about here, right? You should always combine finances or you should always keep all your finances separate. Like, frankly, both of them can be problematic for your marriage, depending on the circumstances that you're facing, right? That's why the kind of tip number 1 is there's a right answer for you and there's a wrong answer for you, and it's different from everybody else's. We just need to figure out what that right and wrong answer is for you. You know, you should always combine 100% of your accounts always. Sounds good in theory, but frankly, if you and your spouse have a few specific differences in financial habits, that like doing that without doing some background work first could make a lot of your financial arguments worse out of the gate. And you know, unless you're doing that underlying work to get on the same page, like you're not necessarily going to be equipped to handle those differences. And on the flip side, right, you probably don't need me to tell you that, you know, never combining any of your money can create some logistical challenges, right? There are some barriers in place to working together if everything is separate. You know, at the end of the day, no two relationships, no two financial situations are exactly the same, right? The right choice for you as a family based on the way you manage money and your specific money habits, money scripts, money values, right? Could be the wrong choice for others, right? Like you need to appropriately tailor the way you manage money as a family to the specific dynamics of your relationship. and that'll help you actually make your marriage stronger in the process, which is the idea, right? This is just a core tenet of my marriage-centered financial planning process, right? You need customized guidance for your family based on proven principles and figuring out which principles to adapt based on where you and your spouse are in the moment, right? When you're deciding whether to combine accounts, the first step is to meet each other where you're at. You know, physicians don't hand out prescriptions, kind of penicillin or otherwise, to patients without making that diagnosis first. And the same applies to making good financial decisions as a couple. And again, I talk a lot about this in my book. The link to get that is in the show notes if you are interested. So, moving on to tip number two. There are very, very few good reasons to keep all of your finances separate, right? So all the above being said about how there, you know, there's a right or wrong solution for you, like we can customize it based on where you're at. That being said, right, in the vast majority of cases that I've seen over the years, it almost always makes sense to combine at least something, right? The number of cases where you literally should, like the optimal solution is to keep everything separate, are very, very, very few and far between. I've talked to hundreds of couples about the state of their finances over the past 7 years and who walked me through how they manage money together, where they're struggling. And like, I'm not sure I've ever seen a case where the optimal strategy is to keep literally everything separate. There's plenty of gray area on the spectrum of combining everything versus combining nothing. You know, I've seen a lot of cases where I thought it made sense to keep certain things separate or combine certain things rather than kind of being in a rush to go to one end or the other. But usually when I meet a couple who wants to keep everything separate, to me, that's a sign that they're using completely separate accounts as a way to avoid the tough money or goal-based conversations that frankly they just need to have if they're going to move forward together and succeed financially. Right, separate accounts in that context can be a way for you to keep your head in the sand, right? To not be fully engaged and aware and attuned with where your family is financially, rather than proactively addressing challenges that are going to come up. And you know, like I think separate accounts as a way to avoid tough conversations typically does not work out very well in the long run. You know, in the best case scenario, like of all the couples I've talked to who have wanted to keep things separate, right? Usually, like at the best case scenario is that they don't want to make changes to their accounts because like it's a lot of work, right? And they don't necessarily want or have the time to take an hour to do the necessary work to just start combining some of the things to simplify their financial lives a little bit to start to combine. And look, right, I'm all about making managing money easy for couples. We've talked about that on this podcast in various capacities a lot before. But you know, if you want to be so hands-off with your money that you don't want to take a little bit of time just to get things set up so that you can manage things easily and effectively going forward, like that's just, to me, that's a bad sign about just the future financial trajectory, right? We need to do a little bit of legwork to get you set up for success down the road. And then certainly I'm all about making things easy down the road, right? Don't get me wrong there. And so look, right, if you or your spouse is resisting or has resisted the idea of combining anything, right, it's really important to understand why that's the case. And I sometimes when you ask the question why, like it can come across as judgmental, and that's not what I'm trying to do here, right? Like genuinely, right, why is it the case that you're hesitant or you or your spouse is hesitant to combine anything? Like what is holding you back? Because typically, the idea of resisting the idea of combining anything is some sort of symptom of an underlying issue that we want to address sooner rather than later. And one final note on this that I think often gets missed by couples early on, right, when they're making the decision about whether or how to merge finances after they get married. You know, I've seen a lot of times in my work with couples over time that keeping completely separate finances, frankly, it can create weird or problematic power imbalances over time in your marriage. You know, those power imbalances can take a few different forms, right? On the one hand, they often will involve things like future savings goals, right? If, for example, your spouse has a ton of student loan debt and you are able to save a much higher percentage of your income for retirement than your spouse because they're struggling with the student loans, you know, you might find yourself in a position to be able to retire years or even a decade or more earlier than your spouse. Or maybe you retire at the same time, but you're in a much, much, much more secure financial state at that point in time. And so, you know, if you fast forward, right, because we've kept everything separate, because we haven't addressed the debt together, right, we fast forward, you're so far ahead of them when it comes to retirement. You know, like if your spouse can't afford to travel with you during retirement or whatever it is that you want to do in your retirement, like, I mean, do you really just want to stay home with them because you haven't combined everything or travel by yourself, right? Just because you've always decided to pay your own way. Like it can be challenging, right? In thinking through those power imbalances with savings goals over time. And frankly, like if you kept things separate up until that point, like I don't necessarily buy that you'd be gung-ho about all of a sudden starting to combine things down the road. And if you are, like that might be a sign that maybe we should start making those changes to be a little bit more efficient with how you're using your finances as a family in the short term. Now, I've also seen, this is shifting gears a little bit, but I've also seen problematic power dynamics pop up with couples, specifically when they keep all their finances separate, when one spouse decides to leave the workforce to be a stay-at-home parent. You know, that can be a great choice for your family. I have clients who have done that. It works really well when everything or at least some things are combined as a family. But I mean, if you have separate finances and you leave the workforce to be a stay-at-home mom or dad, you are going to be relying on your spouse for an allowance, right, for spending money, right? And which puts you in the position of, you know, are you happy with that amount? Are you happy with the amount of money they're giving you from their separate accounts to spend? Do we need to negotiate a raise with them like you would your boss? That's just kind of a surefire way to kill the romance in your marriage, right? Is negotiating raises of personal spending money from your allowance from your spouse. Like it's just gross, right? It doesn't work well. It can really be a problem for couples down the road. Look, in the short term, like it often feels the easiest or even the safest to keep your finances separate, but there's just a lot of issues that can arise over time if everything is separate. And I encourage you to think about those in advance. So that's tip number two. Tip number three, on the flip side, it is impossible to merge all of your finances after marriage, right? We just talked about tip number two is about how I never recommend keeping everything separate. On the flip side, it's worth remembering that even if you want to combine everything, you actually can't. You cannot combine everything, right? Specifically, it's impossible to combine any of your retirement accounts, or if you have HSAs, health savings accounts, you can't combine those either. You certainly can decide to combine checking accounts, credit cards, although we'll talk about those in a little bit, savings accounts, non-retirement investment accounts, all those things you can combine, no problem. But you can't combine retirement accounts, right? Your 401k or 403b, if you have, like, depending on what type of retirement account you have through work, those are tied to your job, right? Like there's no adding your spouse to your 401k plan. Even if you worked with your spouse, you each would have to have your own separate 401k plans. It's just the way those accounts work. If you have a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA, there's a reason that it's called the Roth IRA and not the Roth JRA, right? Like the I in IRA literally stands for individual. An IRA is an individual retirement account, not a joint retirement account. So those can't be combined. They just flat out can't. Now look, right, that doesn't mean that there aren't steps you should take when you get married with your 401ks and your IRAs. In fact, like the opposite is true. You should take some steps. Specifically, you should make sure the beneficiaries on those accounts are updated after you get married, after you have kids, because you want to make sure that your spouse is the primary beneficiary on those accounts. I recommend all my clients do that. That is not combining things today, but if something were to ever happen to you, it confirms that those accounts will go to your spouse to support them. I do recommend that couples do that in almost every case. But if you're feeling pressure, and I don't actually even care where the pressure is coming from, that's not true. I do care, but it's a figure of speech, right? Whether you are feeling pressure to combine things from other people, from other financial podcasts or articles that you read, from some sort of internal pressure inside you or from your spouse, if you're feeling that pressure, wherever it's coming from to combine all of your accounts, like, this idea that you can't combine retirement accounts, I hope is actually a little bit reassuring for you, because that means that it clearly is possible to succeed financially as a couple without literally combining all of your money, because nobody ever has, right? Every couple who has ever retired without getting divorced has found a way to manage their money together without combining retirement accounts. every couple in the history of this country who has retirement accounts and has retired without getting divorced has found a way to manage their money together without combining accounts. You can too. I promise you can too. So that's tip number three, right? Remember, in the context of this conversation, you can't combine everything even if you wanted to. And all that actually leads very well into tip number four that I have on how to merge finances after marriage. And that is that combining goals is way, way, way more important than combining accounts, in my opinion. What do you want your lives to look like as a married couple 5, 10, 20, 50 years from now? What do you want your lives to look like together decades in the future? You know, whenever we talk about combining finances or just in general kind of getting started managing money together with your spouse, I always like to start the conversations about the vision for the future, right? Forget for a second about where you are today financially. Where do you want money to take you down the road? What specific goals do you have, or what specific goals can we set to kind of make that vision that you have a reality, right? Where do we want your money to take you? Because frankly, I find that most couples have similar long-term visions for their lives, even if they're not on the same page financially today, right? Like most couples want the same things out of life, at least at a high level, right? It's one of the things that make you a good long-term pair in the first place. And frankly, if you are in disagreement about what those big life goals should be, that's something you want to address first, I think, before we start worrying about combining accounts. But once we get in alignment on what those goals should be and clear on what those goals should be, then I find that shifting gears to discuss what we want the bank and investment account structure to look like, to give you the easiest, clearest path to achieving those goals. Like frankly, the conversation about combining just gets a lot easier once we know exactly where it is we want your money to take you. Combining accounts is part of that discussion, but I mean, there's other factors as well, right? What type of accounts? Where are we putting our money? How much are we putting in each bucket? Do we need to open more accounts than what we have right now, right? Are the accounts set up the right way? There's a lot of different factors of it beyond just literally merging the accounts from or deciding whether you want to keep joint or separate accounts, right? The reality is that in a lot of cases, combining at least some of those accounts is going to make tracking and achieving your goals just easier over time, right? It's just the fewer accounts you have, the easier it is. But you don't need to necessarily, as long as, right, you're working toward the same thing, right? And it can certainly be much easier to make the decision on whether you should combine some or everything when you're focusing on what you want your money to achieve you rather than, quote unquote, just where you are today. So that's tip number four. Tip number five, don't assume that keeping your accounts separate will keep them safe if the marriage doesn't work out. This is one of the biggest myths I come across all the time when I talk to couples about this, right? Look, in a world where money is often cited as one of the primary causes of divorce, like I get it, right? It can feel safer when you're going into a marriage to not combine things. Like I think it's natural to feel that, right? I've talked to dozens and dozens of couples over the past 7 years who cite at least I'll say perceived legal benefits or perceived safety as a primary reason that they're not super gung-ho about combining things when they get married, right? Often they'll say things to me like, you know, if we end up getting divorced, I'll have all my money separate to use to rebuild my life. So it feels safer to keep things separate. But, you know, it's very state by state, but in most states, that feeling of safety is something of an illusion, right? Because keeping separate financial accounts when you get married, typically doesn't legally protect you in the event of a divorce unless you have a prenup, postnup, or some sort of legal contract that clearly spells that out. Rules vary by state. I'm not an attorney, right? You want to get legal guidance if this is something that's really an important issue for you. But just the idea that you automatically get to keep your separate accounts if you split up is not a reality in many, many cases, right? Most states require that assets are divided fairly, right? Like literally that's the word, that they're divided fairly between spouses in the event of a divorce. And they look at separate accounts as part of that as well. And for a handful of states, if you are residents of, I'm pulling out the list right now, Arizona, California, Idaho, Louisiana, Nevada, New Mexico, Texas, Washington State, and Wisconsin, right? If you live in any of those states, you live in what's called the community property state, where like the default law in those states is that everything you acquire during your marriage, including separate income, including separate savings, including money in separate accounts, is automatically treated as shared property that belongs to both of you 50-50, right? The starting balance of your accounts at the time of your marriage might be considered separate property if you have it documented, but any income or savings beyond that point is typically treated as joint property in those specific states that I mentioned. Again, just in case you missed it, it's Arizona, California, Idaho, Louisiana, Nevada, New Mexico, Texas, Washington State, and Wisconsin as of this recording in early 2024. Right. At the end of the day, though, right, regardless of what rules the states follow, whether your accounts are joint or individual, it doesn't make a big difference ultimately. Right. The state is going to require you to divide assets according to their framework. Keeping your money separate just doesn't automatically protect you with that. It can feel safer in the short term, but often that's more a feeling than it is actually backed up in reality. Right. Again, if it's a concern for you, I highly recommend you meet with an estate planning attorney to get this sorted out. But that's just something to think about as tip number 5. Moving on to tip number 6 on how to merge finances after you get married. Some accounts are easier to merge than others. I find that this is often the case for couples. And if you find that some accounts are easier to merge than others, don't fight that urge, right? Lean into it, right? And to be clear, I don't necessarily mean that some accounts are like literally easier tactically or logistically to combine in terms of whatever paperwork you need to fill out and so on. I'm more talking just from a point of what reservations you have about merging finances. I find that certain types of accounts for couples can be easier to just deal with than others, right? There are less concerns about certain types of accounts than others. And so therefore, it's very often the case in the conversations I've had with couples over the years where they immediately decide to combine certain accounts, but hold off at least temporarily on certain others, and just know that that is normal, right? Some accounts tend to be easier for couples to decide to merge than others. And again, like frankly, that can vary. There's no rhyme or reason necessarily to which ones are easier or harder. It varies based on your unique family dynamics as a family, right? Two examples of that. First and foremost, right? I often meet with couples who are hesitant to combine checking accounts specifically, and the people who I find are generally hesitant to make that change are people who have really big saver spender differences, right? One person really likes to save money, the other person, something they don't like something they don't think saving is important, but they'd rather spend money rather than save it. And so they have a hard time agreeing on a budget, and they're concerned, rightly so, I will say, that combining checking accounts without doing some underlying work to get on the same page about the budget is just going to shine a big spotlight on those differences and cause them to fight about money more, right? Like that point blank, like they're right about that. You need to put in the work to get on the same page and figure out how to manage, like how to set a savings and spending plan that's going to work for both of you before you actually combine checking accounts in that case. And so that's normal, right? And certainly like feel free to reach out to me on Instagram. I'm at Paysetter Planning, or you can book a call with me. I'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. If you are interested in doing that type of work with your spouse, that's something I can help you with. But regardless, right, I often find that couples, right, particularly get hung up on the checking accounts if they fight about spending a lot. But those same couples are often very willing to combine their savings accounts or their emergency fund, right? They're on board with working toward shared savings goals, right? They're trying to buy a house together. They're trying, you know, whatever the case may be. Like the hesitation about combining has more to do with triggering the day-to-day money fights than it does with being willing to share an emergency fund, for example. And so in cases like this, you know, for them, like the savings accounts are easier to merge than the checking accounts. And so like go for it, right? I usually recommend for couples in that scenario, start by combining savings accounts and maybe hold off on the discussion about whether they should combine checking accounts until they do the legwork needed to get on the same page about their budget, which again is important to do. We don't want to use separate checking accounts as a way to avoid that conversation per se, but I do think that having those conversations and getting the plan in place first just is a much easier path for couples to follow. And on the other hand, though, sometimes I come across couples who are in the exact opposite scenario, right? For example, I worked with a couple a year or so ago where the wife, I'll call her Lisa. That's not her real name, but let's just call her Lisa. You know, she came in and she was unwilling to combine anything, right? When we first started working together, right? Like, there was just a flat out not interested in combining everything. And so I was interested in why that was the case. And so we explored that a little bit, as I mentioned, you know, earlier. I wanted to understand what her specific concerns about combining were. And eventually, right, she told me that her best girlfriend had recently gone through a pretty nasty divorce where, again, I wasn't privy to this. Like, I'm just kind of going off what she said. Like, you know, the husband drained her friend's shared bank accounts right down to zero and on his way out the door, left her with nothing. You know, my understanding is that she was able to get a portion of that back, or her portion of that back, but it took some time, right? In the short term, she had like no money in the account until she got that sorted out. Again, that's not Lisa herself, but that's her friend. But she saw her friend go through that, and that freaked her out, I think, understandably so. And as we talked about it, right, Lisa kind of realized that it wasn't that she wasn't willing to work with her husband financially. It wasn't even that she wasn't willing to combine anything. Like, eventually, we got to a point in a conversation where she told us, look, right, if I could just keep $20,000 separate in a savings account with only my name on it as an emergency fund, like just in case I ever need it. Not that I don't trust you, but like just due to kind of the secondhand trauma of seeing my friend go through this, like I want to have $20,000 separate in a separate account. If I can do that, I'd be willing to combine everything else. And her husband agreed. Like he thought that was reasonable. He agreed that he'd keep his emergency fund separate as well. Like he'd keep his $20,000 or whatever it was separate. And so that's what they decided. They kept separate emergency funds and combined literally everything else that they could, right? They honored the fear that Lisa had right after watching her friend go through that struggle, right? And they didn't let that hold them up from combining everything else. Like it ended up working out really well for them, right? Again, like there's not necessarily right or wrong answers about what needs to be combined first, what's easiest, what's hardest, right? But, right, I share all that to say, like, if after some reflection and discussion, you agree that like certain accounts feel better to combine than others, like don't fight that, right? But to me, that's a completely normal thing. And I would encourage you to lean into that, right? Don't let black or white, all or nothing thinking hold you back. Combine what you're ready to combine if you want to, and then keep working on the rest, right? Don't ignore problems because you have your account separate, but you don't need to lead with the account piece, right? Work on getting on the same page first before you merge things that you're uncomfortable with. So that's tip number six. Tip number seven. Be careful and intentional when merging credit cards specifically, right? Up until this point, we haven't really talked about credit cards. I primarily focused on bank accounts and investment accounts. And I mean, a lot of the things we just talked about are going to apply to credit cards as well. Credit cards are a little bit unique in that they affect your credit report. And so when making changes to your credit cards or credit in general, whether it's getting a new joint credit card, whether it's adding your spouse to an existing credit card that you have, you want to think through the credit report implications or credit score implications of that. So two tips on that. First and foremost, don't close individual credit cards after you get married under most circumstances anyway, right? If you decide you want to combine things with your couple and you get married, you get new joint credit cards with your spouse, the temptation is just to close any old individual credit cards you have. But that can be actually a pretty bad thing for your credit score. Unless old credit cards, unless the individual credit cards you have some sort of annual fee associated with them, I actually recommend keeping them active in almost every case. Credit scores are a little bit of an art more than a science, right? But we generally speaking, right, they're based on a number of things. Three of which are the average age of your credit accounts, the age of your oldest credit account, and your credit utilization, which is a fancy way of saying how much of your available credit balance are you using at any one point in time. And when you close old accounts specifically, that can negatively impact all three of those areas, right? And so by getting rid of your older accounts, it can actually lower your credit score. It can make you look worse from a credit standpoint. And so like in those scenarios, like it's better to add your spouse as an authorized user of old cards to keep the old accounts active, or just keep them separate and use them enough to keep them active, but not that frequently. But there's certainly nothing wrong with adding joint credit cards in those scenario. But I wouldn't close out old credit cards just for the sake of doing so. You want to be careful with that from a credit perspective. And then the third piece of that, the second piece of that is you don't want to make big changes to your credit cards in general right before you take out a loan and really specifically buy a house, because that's typically the biggest loan that anyone's going to take out. You know, in general, having more available credit and not using it increases your credit score in the long run, right? In this context, right, if you get married and decide you want to have a new joint credit card, opening that new joint credit card can be a really good long-term play, as long as it doesn't lead you to overspend or as long as you're not tempted to use it more than you should. But making changes to your credit usually involves taking a step backward before you take three or four steps forward. You know, applying for too much new credit right before you take out a mortgage, it can lead to higher interest rates on the mortgage. And I just don't think it's worth it for the sake of changing whose name's on your credit cards or adding some new joint credit cards, right? Even if you want to combine all of your finances, I would not make that change right before you apply for a mortgage. If, right, adding the new credit cards is part of that, because typically that's going to cause a short-term drop in your credit score. It doesn't last too long, but you don't want to do that right before you apply, take out a mortgage. Instead, I'd wait until afterwards. And then once you have the mortgage, then go ahead and open whatever new joint credit card you want to. A warning about that, though. One of the biggest issues I hear from couples who have individual credit cards that they keep after they get married has to do with lack of transparency or clarity around balances on those cards, like what's going on them when the payments are being made. I think it can be challenging, right, for as a couple to manage your finances together, particularly if you're paying those credit card bills from a joint account, if you can't easily see the full picture of what's going on. To be fair, right, that applies to separate bank accounts as well, but for whatever reason, like the complaint that I hear from couples is on the credit card side on this front. And so if you decide to do that, you want to have some sort of system to keep track of everything so that both spouses can see what's going on across all your cards, right? You have some sort of financial dashboard or account aggregator that has all your data in one spot that you can see so that everybody knows where things are at. Just a tip there. Anyway, moving on from credit cards. Tip number eight. Last couple are short, so we're almost done here. Tip number eight on merging finances after marriage. The account structure you end up with should make it as easy as possible for you to track your progress. Right? Whatever you decide to do, like for your family about how to merge finances after you get married, you want to set up your account so that you can very easily see where you're at and measure your progress. I typically recommend that couples have at least one account for every goal that they have, right? Every goal should have a separate pool of money that's not commingled with other goals, right? So for example, I often will see couples will have one big savings account, right? And if you have one big savings account where you're keeping your emergency fund, your travel fund, your house down payment savings, and new car fund, and they're all just in one spot, and there's no delineation between what money goes where, it's just really hard to know if you're on track to buy a house or buy a car or whether you can afford to take the trip you want to take if the money's all mushed together. And it can be also be tempting to steal from one bucket or another, right? If there's no, I'm using steal in quotes, obviously, but it can be tough to manage though, right? And so I think it can feel overkill sometimes to have separate pools of money, separate accounts for separate goals. But it just makes it a lot easier to see your progress over time. I very rarely talk to people who regret getting a really clear account structure in place. So I would do that as you think through how to combine things or how to merge things. And then finally, last but not least, on the health insurance front, most couples that I see end up on separate health insurance plans these days. There's a lot of factors in terms of like how to pick health insurance plans, right? You want to look at the cost, you want to look at the benefits. Whether your providers are in network, right? There's all sorts of things to do. I actually have a pretty detailed article on my website. I'll add that to the show notes as well, but you can go through and look at all that stuff. But that article is really old. I wrote it back in November 2017. And all the things in there still apply. But one thing that's changed over the past few years that I've noticed, though, is that for a lot of couples, it's actually a lot more expensive to be on the same insurance, for health insurance specifically. You know, you want to check the numbers. You want to, like, do the math. You want to look at the total cost for whether you're all on your plan or all on your spouse's plan, or you have separate plans. And the cost per paycheck is, of course, only one of the relevant factors there. But the trend of late that I've noticed is that employers will often subsidize or chip in for part of your health insurance coverage costs as an employer benefit, but many employers don't extend that same courtesy to your spouse. And so as a result, right, it might be relatively inexpensive for just you to be on your company's insurance policy. But I mean, I've seen cases where it's 3, 4, 5 times as expensive to add a spouse to the plan, right? Than it would be if your spouse is on their own plan. And so look, there's exceptions to this. You want to double check. And even if it is much more expensive for you all to be on the same plan, right, there's certain scenarios where that could make sense, right? If you have really good insurance, for example, if one of you is self-employed and doesn't have access to employer-sponsored health insurance, if one of you is out of the workforce for whatever reason, if you're between jobs, like there's lots of reasons why you might end up on the same plan. But I mostly bring this up because I sometimes talk to couples who say, like, I feel like I'm going crazy. It can't actually be this much more expensive for us to be on the same health insurance plan. And I'm here to tell you that, like, if you're thinking that, honestly, you're probably right, right? If you are viewing your options to merge health insurance and notice that the cost of doing so is way higher than you'd expect, yeah, you're probably right about that, to be honest. I've seen a lot of couples who decide to combine everything except their health insurance and the other stuff that you can't combine, which we talked about earlier, right? But health insurance is often the outlier that actually does end up separate. So I just wanted to share that. So we covered a lot in this episode. I'm going to end things here. Make the decision about what you want to combine, right, and what you want to work on. And if you need any help having that conversation, please feel free to reach out. Ultimately, deciding how you're going to merge is only the first step. You actually have to implement it. And if you need some help with that and how to communicate about money going forward, you know where to find me. My email is bill@paysetterplanning.com. My Instagram is @paysetterplanning. And you can feel free to reach out to me on either of those places. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and we will see you 2 weeks from today for our next episode. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Money and Marriage Podcast. If you want to learn more, you can access my favorite money exercise for free if you head to paysetterplanning.com/moneyandmarriage. Again, that's paysetterplanning.com/moneyandmarriage. Get your access today, and I'll see you next time.